On the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello and welcome to Boston as the Brewers getting ready to go with the Red Sox this week. I'm Dominic Catronio. Man, this is my favorite city in the world, honestly. Well, I haven't left the contiguous U.S., so I guess I can't really say the world, but you get what I mean, because, man, I have a lot of connection to this city. I have spent a lot of my youth here. I spent two summers of Cape Cod here, interning to be a play-by-play broadcaster. I met my current girlfriend here. This is just a very, very special city to me, and Fenway Park is absolutely incredible. So this is a Brewers Weekly that is taped, with all that being said. So if you are listening live here on 620 WTMJ, sorry, I'm not getting to the text line today. I'm not getting to any callers today because of the fact that it is a taped version tonight. Of course, for the podcast listeners, this is no big deal for you. We are going to talk about a lot of stuff here today. First and foremost, no need to hit the panic button, and what the Brewers are going through right now with injuries, with pitching questions, and that sort of thing, what to do with that. And then also we're going to talk a little bit about Yelly. We're going to talk a little bit about way too early trade deadline stuff. Also, I've got some gripes to pick about the bat tracking stuff that I don't love so far here in what we're trying to learn from the bat tracking stuff. There's some stuff that I think is being taken out of context and some stuff that is not being identified well enough, and I'm guilty of this too, and I want to highlight some of that here in this show as well. And we're also going to talk about just kind of looking ahead at as far as what's going on with the pitching staff, because as we know, that is going to be the main cog of whether or not the Brewers are going to be successful moving forward, is the health of their pitching staff moving forward. If you came here to talk about lefty lineups against southpaws, that's what yesterday's episode was all about. So you can listen to Wednesday's postgame show when the Brewers lost 1-0 to the Marlins. You can find that at Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts. But for this one, we're kind of pushing it forward and previewing the Red Sox, previewing next week, the big week, with Craig Counsell's return and all of that in this episode. And a reminder, it is taped, so I apologize if you came here ready to call in and have a debate with me. So we'll have to do it over social media, I guess. You can follow me on Twitter at Dom_Catronio. I'm here all weekend. I've got a pregame show on Saturday with Brewers warm-up, and I'm looking forward to it being here in Boston. Let's talk about why I believe there is no reason to panic right now here. First and foremost, right off the bat. Okay, reminder. This team is 28-21. There is no reason to hit the panic button right now, because last season, as I said this in yesterday's show, they were 27-22 and in second place. Now, we don't really care about standings at this point in the season because there is so much season left to go. But remember, I mean, the Brewers had that terrible West Coast trip where they got swept by the Rockies at their place, lost a series against the Giants, and then they had Willie get the concussion on the foul ball into the dugout. And you look back at last year's team, so much of it was the lack thereof of offense and the slow starts of Corbin and Freddie. And then you looked into Brandon Woodruff getting hurt 2 weeks into the season, and you had him for virtually none of the season last year. I know he made, 9-10 starts last season. In reality, that's a third of what you would expect out of him, and the Brewers can safely say they didn't have him for the full season. And you look at the guys that they weren't getting contributions from last season, the Jesse Winker deal, Rowdy falling off a cliff there in May and into June, Willie getting the concussion. It was a confluence of things kind of hitting all at once. And right now, while the offense is okay, maybe not against lefties, but I've said this before, I'll say it again, they have played 14 games out of 49. 14 games with the ideal core altogether, being Christian Yelich, William Contreras, Reese Hoskins, and Willie Adames. That is a massive piece of what the Brewers are trying to figure out. I mean, that's 2 through 5 in the order right there. William batting second, Yelly batting third, Adames batting fourth, and Hoskins batting fifth. Then you can throw in the fact that Garrett Mitchell hasn't even had a plate appearance yet this season with all the questions in the outfield. Jackson Churio, quite frankly, looks like a 20-year-old in the big leagues. And we can't sit here and say, oh my gosh, that wasn't supposed to happen. We knew there were going to be growing pains. We tried to warn you in spring training there were going to be growing pains. And he is feeling those pains right now. And quite frankly, it's probably going to be Joey Weimer as the odd man out. I mean, he's got another couple weeks until Garrett Mitchell returns. He's scheduled to hit off of a tee with two hands for the first time this weekend here in Boston. But Weimer and Perkins have been thrown into a lot more duty than maybe expected. And even Churio playing this much, I'm sure they hoped him to play this much, but to be struggling this much is certainly something that they're taking their lumps with him as he grows up in the big leagues. Big league development is going to help Jackson Churio. Now, I'm getting off the point of why we're not panicking right now. And just like when the Brewers lost Christian Yelich when he was swinging the bat hot, the Brewers lose Rhys Hoskins when he's swinging the bat hot. Now, the good news is he's already running, and he is already preparing to ramp back up. He is not anticipating needing a rehab appearance from his strained hamstring. But Yelly was hot. Rhys hitting .278 over his previous 16 games before the injury with a .928 OPS, including that clutch home run against the Cardinals, one of four he had hit over those previous 16 games. And I know Rhys has really had the date circled, that first week of May or June circled, to return to Philly. And I know that might be weighing on him, and I bet once he gets past that return to Philly, things will really start to take off for him once again once he gets healthy as well. But again, they're one win better than they were last season at this point in the year. And finally, I've said it before, I'll repeat it once again, this team was 500 in June last year. 500. June 14th. And yet, June 23rd is the day that I look at as saying, okay, let's circle that date. Literally 1 month from tonight as we sit here and talk to you. The reason why I circle that date, here are the next few series leading up to that. You've got Boston this weekend. They've been playing well, to their credit. You got the Cubs four-game set this week. Quite frankly, with the Brewers rotation, we'll get into that later, hoping for a split. You got the White Sox, and look, it's the White Sox, but if you take a team for granted, like the Brewers might have done with the Marlins, you're going to lose the series. So maybe some revenge and, you know, some animosity. They swept the White Sox last season. You get them. Then you get that Philly trip. Then you go to Detroit, who's playing solid baseball right now. Then you come home for Toronto, and who knows what to make of Toronto right now, and Cincinnati. So that's a weird homestand. Then you go the West Coast trip, and that is scheduled to be Garrett Mitchell's return, hopefully, against the Angels and against the Padres. Now, the Padres don't have Xander Bogaerts. The Angels don't have Mike Trout. So maybe you're catching those guys at right time. So literally a month from today, June 23rd, in another 30 games, where will the Brewers be standing? That's when we can actually have real hard talks about, all right, who's cutting it, who's not, what lineup's working, what's not. So that's why I am not hitting the panic button right now. And just for perspective, to wrap up this segment, last season, on June 23rd, the Brewers were only three games above 500. They were 39-36. So much can happen. You still got these head-to-heads with the Cubs, and they're all kind of in the middle of the season. You got next week, then you've got another one, another pair of series in July, then you're done with the Cubs. So that's going to be very, very quick and fast on us, and then before we know it, it's going to be trade deadline time. So let's talk about the trade deadline coming up next. This is Brewers Weekly taped edition right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
So way too early look at things. Welcome back. I'm Dom Petronio. The Brewers trade deadline thoughts. Let's just get this out of the way right off the top here. I've said it before, and hopefully this is the last time I need to say it. The Brewers are not signing Trevor Bauer. They're not doing it. They're not. Because if they actually wanted him, it would have already happened. So stop getting in my mentions. Stop texting me. Stop calling me. They are not getting Trevor Bauer. Drop that name from your vocabulary. Furthermore, they're not getting Zach Greinke. They're not getting Rich Hill. They're not getting these guys. Granted, the Julio Teheran experiment worked for about a month last season, so I see one of those names being more likely than Trevor Bauer. But that being said, I just don't see the benefit from having one of those guys for a month when you have reinforcements on the way. But the reason I bring all that up is because the number one way too early look at the trade deadline wish list is starting pitching. But get in line. Who doesn't need starting pitching? And we just saw it last night against Jesus Luzardo. The reason why he is so sought after is because not only does he have this year of control, he has another season on top of control as well, which obviously ups his asking price. he might be the best available longer-term rental on the market right now. Now, you look at some of the White Sox and some of the guys that they may be thinking of dealing. You know, I don't see them dealing Crochet. Now, that's going to take quite a lion's share to get something out of Garrett Crochet, given he throws so hard and he's getting so much swing and miss so far this season. And he's just now entering arbitration this season, a former first-rounder. Maybe Chris Flexen, they can get a trade out of. Eric Fetty might get something out of them. But then, if you're the White Sox, you got to make sure you have somebody ready to go to fill in after him. But with that being said, obviously the top of the list is starting pitching. And I'm just throwing out Lizardo as a name. There really isn't that much available coming up this year when it comes to free agents to be and immediate rentals from teams that might make guys available. So we can sit here and dream and hope, but at the same time, the Brewers might be full because they want to make sure that they get things right in the interim of, hey, let's not load up the roster and manipulate the 60-day IL, and then all of a sudden we have these decisions to make later in the year when they have to cut guys that they don't want to cut. So that's what I see. Number one, starting pitching. But who doesn't need starting pitching at the trade deadline? Now I'm getting a little bit into the weeds here of two other things on my wish list for the Brewers for the trade deadline. Number two is middle relief. And you may be thinking, Dom, is it bullpen? What? Why do they need more bullpen? Let me explain. Abner Uribe obviously has that suspension looming over him. And I'll get into him in two numbers in the next segment with the pitching and rotation and with the bullpen thoughts coming up next. But Abner might become your middle relief guy if he can keep his command. But then you've got Koenig, who's lefty, and he's been great. Honestly, I've been pleasantly surprised by Jared Koenig. And then in theory, if D.L. Hall and Jacob Junis return, and we'll talk about this deeper, they can help your middle relief because one of them won't be starting. One of them will be in the bullpen. Or maybe you have piggyback days where one day you start D.L. and then Bryce Wilson follows, or vice versa, where you have start Bryce Wilson, stack the lineup with lefties, and D.L. Hall follows, or Jacob Junis does that, and that sort of thing. So middle relief might be coming in the form of those guys. And the reason I said middle relief is because you're full at the back end between Brian Hudson, between Yoel Piamps, between Trevor McGill, and oh, by the way, Devin Williams, who is now playing catch and starting to ramp up his throwing program, hopefully near the All-Star break is his return. You've got that coming back as well. That's why I say middle relief could be the move for the Brewers. And finally, my third thing on the wish list for the trade deadline of the way too early look here in May is a left-handed power bat. And this might not make sense, but hear me out for a second here. The most consistent power on the Brewers is Christian Yelich. And we have a couple segments away from talking about Yelly. But the Brewers have not had a lot of power otherwise from the left side. The only other guy recently has been Jake Bowers. And ever since he switched to the toe tap, he has been a whole new player. And in fact, I'm pulling up the left-handed filter here on FanGraphs just to see how the Brewers rank among left-handed hitters in the game. Now, they have a 4.2 F4 among left-handed hitters, which is largely carried by Christian Yelich and Bryce Terang because of the fact that they're some of the best hitters on the Brewers team. But when we change that perspective to ISO, ISO is isolated power. It's a metric the way that the higher the number, the better your power production is coming from that. And when we toggle that to their ISO, they fall back down to more of like a league average team when it comes to left-handed power. And that's with Yelly having not hit a home run since coming off the IL. Terang does not hit home runs. At least Bowers is starting to hit some home runs. But that's something I'm going to monitor moving forward because their team batting average from left-handed hitters is all the way down to .239 right now. And albeit it's not great, it's also not terrible because it's right in the middle of the pack. So I'm monitoring left-handed power. Maybe Garrett Mitchell helps with this when he returns. Maybe Sal Frelick hits a groove where he starts hitting a lot more doubles and can be effective that way, not just hitting home runs. So those are three things that I'm just going to be monitoring over the next few weeks as we get closer to trade deadline time. We're a little more than 2 months away from the non-waiver trade deadline. I guess I don't have to say non-waiver anymore. They're all non-waiver these days since they made the rule change. Let's talk a little bit about the pitching and the bullpen coming up next. A reminder, this is a taped version of Brewers Weekly. If you're in the text line, if you're calling in, sorry, I'm taped today. I'm live in Boston, but I'll be with you all weekend long with post-game shows for Brewers and Red Sox. Back with more after this on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, little rotation updates, injury updates, bullpen talk, that sort of thing. There's a little more detail as to why we were talking about starting pitching being one of the wish list items for the Brewers at the trade deadline. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. This is a taped version of Brewers Weekly. If you're listening live here on 620 WTMJ, but don't worry, these are always available in podcast form under Brewers All Access wherever you get your podcasts. With that said, let's get the updates from the injury front. Jacob Junis is expected to throw off of a mound this weekend at Fenway. If that goes well, the next step is a rehab assignment, and the Brewers have to make a decision. Do they want him to come back quicker as a bullpen arm or stretch him out to be a starter, essentially restart his spring training to make sure he's healthy and good to go, and he might become a five-and-dive type guy to make sure that he can make it through the rest of the season. So that's good news with Junis. D.L. Hall has already made one rehab outing, just one inning up in Appleton. He is already on the roster for the AAA Nashville Sounds. He is not listed to start yet. I imagine he will get a start this weekend for his second rehab. This will be 2 to 3 innings, you know, 2 ups or 3 ups if his pitch count allows, to make sure that he's feeling healthy. And then after that, if that goes well once again, maybe only one more outing for him in AAA, and then he can continue to build in the big leagues coming out of the bullpen, which comes back to that middle relief conversation that we were just having, and it spells the end of the line for a guy like Mitch White. And, you know, the Brewers obviously already DFA'd Thiago Vieira. Mitch White does not have any options remaining, so these are some of the things that they're starting to churn and think and figure out when those two main guys, Junis and Hall, return to the rotation. Furthermore, J.B. Bukauskas is playing catch. He's expected to be off of a mound soon. Did not get a firm date on that. But keep in mind, he's been moved to the 60-day IL, which means you need a corresponding move for him to get activated too. And he's not even eligible to come off the IL until June 14th, which is right before that West Coast trip against the Angels and the Padres. So we will monitor that when JB, again, I imagine he'll get activated very quickly. He does have this final option year remaining because he was granted the fourth option. So in the case that the Brewers are full when they call him up, they can just send him down to AAA and have him waiting and ready to come back up to the big league. So that's also good news for the Brewers. And finally on Abner, I know I mentioned him a moment ago, and a few folks have asked what's going on with Abner. When is he going to be back in the big leagues? Quite frankly, I don't see it soon. I mean, remember, he still has to serve the suspension when he arrives, which means the Brewers have to play a man down. Now, if I were guessing, he basically has until the All-Star break to figure it out. Because let's say he dropped the appeal. I don't know for certain if he did or did not drop the appeal. I don't like his odds of winning an appeal, given he started a fight. But if it's 6 games, let's say it's 6 games. And what I see is a way to work around that is to have him arrive 3 days before the All-Star break, meaning, you know, most of your relievers are going to get a breather heading into the break and making sure that, hey, let's empty the tank here before you get 5 straight days off. Mind you, remember, the Brewers have an anomaly in the schedule this year because they play the Twins on the second half of the season to start the second half. That's your quote-unquote geographic rival, which means you only get a 2-game series, which means the Brewers get Saturday and Friday off coming out of the All-Star break. So they will have Monday through Friday off of that All-Star break, 5 days off for the bullpen. So that's huge. And then you have Abner active for those 3 games coming out of the All-Star break when your bullpen is fresh, when everything is okay, and then maybe you can have him come back and be in the bullpen at that point in the season in mid-July. And hopefully by then you have Devin Williams back as well. I see that as being an option for Uribe to return to the team. But the reason why he has until then to figure it out is because in his 7 innings so far in AAA, and mind you, this is with the ABS, so we don't know everything, but with the ABS, yes, he's got a 1-2-3 ERA. He just allowed his first earned runs on Tuesday night in Nashville. But he's only got 7 strikeouts in his 7 1/3 innings and 6 walks, 2 hit batters, and 2 wild pitches. This is exactly the stuff that the Brewers wanted him to work on when he went back down to AAA. Find his command, find his delivery, make sure that he can handle adversity before he returns to the big leagues. So we're going to continue to monitor that throughout the rest of June and into July if the All-Star break turns out to be the time to bring Abner Uribe back. And finally, on rotation thoughts, as I briefly mentioned this yesterday in the postgame show, the Brewers have to decide what they want to do with Freddie. Now, it was really encouraging to see Freddie pitch as well as he did on the fifth day, on just 4 days rest, right, on that traditional starter rotation turn. Will the Brewers do that again with him, using today's off day to have him start game one of the series against the Cubs on Monday? Because that would be his fifth day. He last pitched on Wednesday. The next would be on Monday if you go every fifth day. Obviously, it would only be the fourth game because of the off day. Personally, I want Freddie throwing that game. It's normal rest. It's going to be a rocking environment. He has pitched in the postseason. He knows what that feels like. And this is going to be the closest thing to a playoff environment the Brewers will have faced at this point in the season. Other than going down to Wrigley, it will be the same at American Family Field. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because it changes the rotation. We know that Bryce and Colin will throw the next 2 days, Friday and Saturday. I'm assuming Tobias Myers will go on Sunday, given he only threw one inning on Tuesday night. That was supposed to be his start day. He's thrown three innings in the last 8 days because of a rainout down in Nashville. So I imagine they would put Myers on Sunday, Freddie on Monday. Gasser gets an extra day then on Tuesday because him and Freddie would flip-flop. And then you put everyone back on their every fifth day, with Bryce Wilson going on Wednesday and Colin Ray going on Thursday, which would turn back around to Tobias Myers against the White Sox on Friday, Freddie on Saturday, and then Gasser once again on Sunday. That's how I see it playing out. But one thing you could do, the other wrinkle you could have, is you could have a spot start from Jansen Junk, a spot start from Aaron Ashby in the middle of that Cubs series. Granted, I don't know how much you're really excited about that, given the quality of opponent. Maybe you do it during the White Sox series, as the Brewers don't have another off day until 2 weeks from today, as they're about to hit another 13 in a row stretch starting tomorrow. So three with the Red Sox, four with the Cubs, three with the White Sox, three with the Phillies, off day. So it's going to be a little bit of another grind here before they start getting a few more consistent off days leading into the All-Star break. So these are some of the decisions the big hitters are deciding right now for the Brew Crew. Just a thing to monitor as we'll learn more this week here at Fenway Park. Let's talk about Yelly. It's been good. It's been interesting. It's been at times weird. He obviously had a great week back in Miami against the original club that he had, and had the clutch triple. Obviously ended the game on Wednesday, but we got some numbers I want to talk about with Yelly before and after the injury. That's coming up next on a taped edition of Brewers Weekly. Don't bother with the texts. Don't bother with the calls. This is all taped. So stay with us. Brewers Weekly right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
It's time for everyone's favorite topic, that is talking about Christian Yelich. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers Weekly here on 620 WTMJ. A taped version, once again, just to reiterate, sorry for the podcast listeners, just have to reiterate because it's live radio, these are the mechanics of how things work. We're going to talk about Yelly in this segment. We're going to talk a little bit about some of my gripes with bat speed and some of the things that I'm not loving about all of that. And then finally, we'll wrap things up with just kind of a sentimental moment about Boston and about Fenway Park and about the beauty that is America's most beloved ballpark. But right now, Christian Yelich. Let's hit you with some hard numbers here first, right off the bat. He had 13 hits before his injury. He has 13 hits after his injury. 333 before, 283 after. He's had seven more official at-bats, about the same in plate appearances to this point between before and after. When we look at the rate stuff, obviously the batting average is down by 50 points, but again, that's such a small sample size. It's going to be very volatile before it levels out. He's barely got over 100 plate appearances so far in the season. His on-base percentage, 409 before, 365 after. But the real one that everyone's going to point out is the slugging percentage. 744 slug before. He had all five of his homers before he went on the IL. He has yet to hit a home run since coming off the IL. Granted, he's got a couple of triples and a double. And when you look at some of the other stuff, when I look at hard hit rates, they're identical. He is still hitting the ball. You know, it's a coin flip if he's going to hit the ball 95 or above. He hits the ball hard. It's what Christian Yelich does. However, the barrel rate is what is considered the holy grail, if you will, for contact, meaning you have the right launch angle and you have the right exit velocity to do damage with. He has not had a quote-unquote barrel since he came off the injured list. And you may be thinking, Dom, what the heck does that mean? Nobody really cares as long as he continues to produce like he did against Miami. You're not wrong. I'm fine with that. But I think with the way that Yelly was pulling the ball with authority before the injury, and he's still pulling the ball, but he was lifting the ball. He was elevating the baseball. He was backspinning the baseball. He was able to get a lot more power on the ball. And quite frankly, the Brewers need some power out of him, especially if he's going to be hitting third. Now, it sounds like I'm picking at nits here, and I'm really trying to say he's had been bad since coming off the IL. No, not one bit. Reminder, the dude missed 30 games. He did not have a rehab assignment. He is still managing the injury on a daily basis. He's mixing between left field and DH. I know for a fact Yelly prefers to stay in the game as the left fielder and feels more engaged in that regard. The Brewers, I imagine, were pretty cautious with him coming back, and they will continue to be with him. But when Rhys Hoskins returns, maybe he's going to get the lion's share of DHs as well. So all of this is to be considered for Yelly. The way I see it, he's going to continue to bat third. He's going to face three straight right-handed starters this week. And for Yelly, if you continue to hit the baseball hard, good things will eventually happen. Remember, he didn't have that many at-bats in spring training, and Pat Murphy sort of quoted and said, you know, he's a little lower than what we thought he would be at this point because he was already managing the injury, but we trust Yelly, we know what he's capable of, and we saw what he was capable of, man, in those first 2 weeks. So if we can get back to that version of Yelly, this team could be extremely dangerous with just the fact that you have that left-handed power that we were talking about earlier. And even while Rhys is probably out for the next 10 to 14 days, depending on how this running progression goes for him, if you look at the lineup against the righty, right? So you'll have Terang in the leadoff spot, Williams second, Yelly third, there's some pop, Willie fourth, Bowers fifth, he's had some pop, Ortiz sixth, he's had some pop, until Hoskins returns, maybe Gary's DHing, there's some more pop as well. So these are all things that, when they are lined up as they envisioned, there is some serious power in this order. And furthermore, when Rhys returns, it'll be nice to have the gang back together as they were envisioned to be playing with each other, a perfect blend of lefties and righties. And the fact that Bowers has really turned it on as of late has been a massive development for him and for the Brewers. And I know some folks were really frustrated with how poorly he was playing earlier in the season while he was trying to find his timing again. He was down to 152 on April 24th in Pittsburgh. In those first 50 or so plate appearances, he only had 7 hits and 17 strikeouts. But since bottoming out there at 152 and since finding this toe tap against Kansas City, he has been a completely different player, hitting 302 over his last 19 games. 302 over 63 plate appearances, 3 doubles, a triple, 4 homers. This is what Bowers is here to do. Tap into that raw power that he has, that the Brewers knew he had, and getting the chance to play a lot more. They really needed him in the outfield, little did we know, when Yelly went down and they were asking Perkins to play every day. And then Sal went into a little bit of a funk there too, and not having Garrett, Bowers has quietly been a key cog, and maybe, quite maybe, if he continues doing this, he's easily going to be my unsung hero award, because last year it was Bryce Wilson. It's pretty easy to give it to a pitcher. Brian Hudson maybe was going to be the unsung hero. He's going to be pretty darn sung the rest of the year. For me, at this point of the season, Jake Bowers is my quote-unquote unsung hero of the year because of him adding some power when Yelich has not had it since coming off the IL. So that's some things that we are monitoring right now when it comes to this batting order. With that, let's take another breather. Let's talk a little bit about the advanced stuff. If you're a real nerd like me, you enjoyed seeing it, but there's some things I want to talk about. This is a taped version of Brewers Weekly right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Okay, welcome back. I'm not going to spend too long on these final two segments because I know I can get really lost in the sauce, if you will, when it comes to the advanced bat speed stuff that was released last week officially on Baseball Savant. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio, taped version of Brewers Weekly. So if you're not a nerd like me, I understand, first of all, but you may not fully enjoy this as much. And it's obviously tough on the radio podcast medium to explain these sort of things. So I would really encourage you to go click around Baseball Savant. Literally, I'm sorry, I'm admitting this, that how much of a nerd I am. I read Baseball Savant and Fangraphs every single day. Now, the way I've become the nerd that I am, it's been an accumulation of knowledge. This doesn't happen overnight. I have started reading Fangraphs back when I was in college, back when I was really trying to understand what made the pro game tick. I remember I was extremely curious about Driveline when they were first popping up in 2014, 2015. And at the time, speaking of earlier with the Cape Cod League, and we were all kind of looking around like, are these Driveline guys for real throwing as hard as they can, throwing 110 mile an hour pull downs? What's the point of this? And fast forward 10 years later, it's like, yeah, it's the gold standard, Driveline and Tread and all these other athletic places. So understanding the game at a deeper level and what makes player development tick is something that's very fascinating to me and a topic I love exploring. And one of the tools we now have to explore it a little bit deeper is bat tracking. And I know I've talked about this before, but I'll reiterate the fact that the reason why this is a big deal, it's not because we're going to judge a player solely on his bat tracking and his bat speed or a square up rate or anything like that. The reason is the technology has been ahead from the pitcher's perspective for so long, right? We know what makes pitches move the way they do, what makes pitchers so successful. There are so many ways we can break down every single pitch. And now we're finally catching up to what the hitter is able to do to react to that pitch. Some of the things we've learned with this bat speed data is guys that have a two-strike approach. Maybe they take 1 or 2 miles an hour off their average swing speed when they're up against it, when they have a two-strike count. Or they add a mile or two a mile an hour swing speed when they're ahead in the count, 2-0, 3-1. William Contreras has a two-swing approach, to say the least. Some guys always square up the baseball no matter how hard they swing. Bryce Terang is one of those guys. He does not swing hard, but he squares up the baseball. So does Sal. So does Blake Perkins. So these are things that we have learned in order to help evaluate players. And another thing that's really important to mention with all this, the teams have had this. The teams that have wanted it have been collecting it themselves for years. And now it's finally public-facing using the StatCast technology from Hawkeye. But here's my one main gripe with the Stat Blasts. And I know this may sound odd because, obviously, I talked about it for a while last week with William Contreras leading baseball in what is called a blast. A blast is, you know, kind of similar to what we talked about with barrels, where Yelly hasn't had a barrel where you hit that perfect combination of launch angle and exit velo. That's a barrel. Well, the perfect combination for a blast is the ball being squared up, meaning you've provided at least 80% of the maximum exit velocity allowed on that pitch. There's a whole formula for that. I don't want to get lost with you here. And you have swung the bat at least 75 miles an hour. That is a quote-unquote fast swing. You are 3 miles an hour above league average. The reason I have a gripe with a blast and why I'm not going to take it super seriously right now, it does not take launch angle into effect. Vinny Rotino alerted this to me, and it really kind of forced me to think critically about why doesn't it bring launch angle into effect, because it should, quite frankly. If this is the most valuable swing, allegedly, in baseball, it should matter of how you're hitting the ball. So, for instance, when it comes to a blast, just a ball flagged as a blast, meaning you swung at least 75 miles an hour and squared up, you're slugging over 1,100, which is good, but you're batting only 545, and I say only, right? But on a barrel, you're hitting 690. You're hitting 150 points better on a barrel, and the slugging is obviously doubled because you are hitting the ball in the air more consistently. Furthermore, when we look at William Contreras, who leads baseball in quote-unquote blasts, how many of those 85 blasts are actually ground balls? 31 of them are ground balls, and they're all base hits, mind you, or most of them are base hits. So on blasts that he hits on the ground, they've all been singles. I'm sorry, but that shouldn't count. A blast should be a pitch that has a launch angle minimum. It doesn't have to be a barrel. It has to be a line drive, or it has to be a fly ball. You should not be allowed to count ground balls as blasts. Now, obviously, that would hurt William Contreras in this case because he does swing hard, but I feel like it's a little bit misleading given not just the name, but just the data that's not included in it. People smarter than me can tell me why they think that it's okay that it doesn't include launch angle, but in my opinion, I'm still going to use barrel rate as what I'm going to use to monitor if a hitter is really damaging the baseball. Because that's regardless of swing speed. Just because you swing hard doesn't mean you hit it hard. You need to square up the baseball in order to get a barrel. You always need to square it up to hit the blast, but you're not going to always get a great extra base hit out of it. So That's my little soapbox talk about that. Let's wrap up the program up next. Real quick segment talking about Fenway and why it means so much to me. Tape version of Brewers Weekly wrapping up after this on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Okay, I've got exactly 1 minute left here in the show. So let me tell you a really, really fast story of why Fenway is so special to me. Obviously, my name is Dominic. And what makes that fun is it's not a super common name, especially growing up. Now, a lot more people are being named Dominic, but my mom was ahead of the trend. But it wasn't actually my mom who named me. It was my dad. And for those of you who know, my dad works in baseball. His name is Vince. And his dad's name was Joe. And if you're a real baseball nerd, you may know the fact that that is the names of all three DiMaggio brothers. Yep, there were three of them. Joe's obviously the most famous one, but Vince and Dom all played in the big leagues. And Dom played for the Red Sox. His nickname was the Little Professor. He played center field and wears glasses. Well, that's yours truly as well. And there's a statue, the teammate statue, outside of Fenway Park. Can't wait to pay it a visit once again. That's going to do it for me. We'll see you at Fenway. Until next time, keep on swinging.